Welcome to the Eastman Dental Podcast, where we hope to inspire, motivate, and provide education from our guests' experience.
That was quite some interview for a clinical dental technician there.
I know, it was great to hear Bill's story and starting off in the army, and what a great story about how he ended up leaving the army and all the things that he's done since. I mean, this is a very busy guy.
I think what I particularly like is the fact that he's continued to work clinically as well as being very high up in academia.
And I think whatever your role, there's definite benefit in this episode. So everybody sit back, listen up and enjoy this week's episode.
With your hosts, Josh Hudson and Julia Bruin.
Welcome to the Eastman Dental Podcast, Bill. It's really, really lovely to have you here.
Thank you, Julia. Yeah, it's great to be here. Thank you.
And you've certainly had an extremely interesting and hugely varied career, which for some people may not know actually started in the army. So what made you join the army, and then dental technology obviously followed on from there?
Yeah, it's I can't ever remember when the army wasn't spoken about positively. So my dad was of an age where there was national service, but he elected not to do national service. There were some advantages of not being a national serviceman in that if you, national service was 2 years, I think, at the time, and if you signed up for longer, I think you got paid slightly more and you got better postings. So he had 3 years of national service, or 3 years as a regular soldier rather than 2 years of national service. And he always spoke very positively about his time in the army. And I also had an uncle who spoke very positively about his time in the army. He was in the national service as well. And he was in the Royal Army Dental Corps as a dental technician. And he spent his time really in Germany playing football, but really, really enjoyed his
I'm sure there was
time.
A bit of dentistry in there somewhere, wasn't
there? Was a little bit of dental technology. So I sort of kind of felt that there was a drawing towards the army, and it was something I fancied doing, and I also fancied doing something that had a profession as well. And that was something that Dad would always counsel me around and say, don't just join the army. Join the army, and if there's something professional you can do as well. So I was looking towards dentistry because my uncle was a dental technician, and I used to spend time travelling to visit my auntie and him, and he owned a five-story townhouse in St. George's Road, just near Elephant and Castle, and he had the laboratory on the ground floor, dental practice on the first floor, and he lived above it on the three floors above. So we would go and see them, and I would spend time in the dental laboratory with him and talk to him about dental technology and his time in the army as well. So at some point, sort of around mid to late teens, when it became to that time of what should I do professionally, dental technology was something I was looking at, dentistry was something I was looking at, and the army was something I was looking at as well. So I kind of tied the two things together and joined the army, and that was why that happened. Yeah.
So how long were you in the army for? And was the dental technology part of that? Was the training, join and then train? Did you do it all together?
It's quite unusual thing. I knew that I wanted to do dental technology. So I made a decision to do dental technology rather than clinical dentistry, which I perhaps will come back to a bit later. But so I joined the Royal Army Dental Corps, and you do your soldiering first. So I did my soldiering training, basic training, military training, and then you do your professional training. I did my finished off some education. So I was part of the Army's sort of medical college, where I finished off necessary education that I needed, and then did my professional training at the Royal Army Dental Corps headquarters after doing my basic soldiering. In the dental corps, if you're going to be a dental technician, prior to doing that, you have to be a dental nurse. So I was a dental nurse first. So I had to train to be a dental nurse first. I spent a few months training to be a dental nurse. Then I was posted to a regiment working as a dental nurse, with my first posting as a dental nurse was myself as 19 years old, I think. The dentist had just qualified as a dentist, just finished their basic training as a dental, as a dentist, a 23-year-old lady, Irene Brooks, and there was her as 23-year-old, myself as a 19-year-old, responsible for 49 Field Regiment Royal Artillery's dental care. with neither of us having a clue what we were doing, really. And she wouldn't mind me saying that. She would say to me, Bill, you know, what are we going to do? You know, just graduated, no foundation training.
That's quite a thing, isn't it?
It was a real thing, yeah. And actually, it was great fun. It really was good fun. And I spent my time, you know, she would do her dentistry, I would do my dental nursing, both of us trying to do our best. And primarily, you're dealing with a group of people who are between, primarily males at the time, soldiers, 18 to 40 years old, not huge amounts of troublesome dentistry, to be honest. You know, it wasn't too bad dentistry. You would occasionally get units that were posted in. And if you had a unit that was posted in where they'd been for, sometimes we would often see some of the Scottish regiments that had recruited from some of the areas of Scotland where they're slightly more deprived. You might see a little bit more interesting dentistry, a bit higher rates of decay and more kind of dentures fitted, that kind of stuff. But it was really good. And actually, it reinforced to me, working as a dental nurse, that I really enjoyed doing that, but the patients would come in and it made me realise that actually I'm really pleased I'm making the bits that go in their mouth rather than dealing with them. So I thought at the time, I always knew I was going to do dental technology. You had to do your dental nurse training first. And I knew my dental technology training would start fairly shortly. And it really made me think I have made the right decision doing my dental technology. But we can perhaps talk about it a bit.
But that's probably given you a bit more of an understanding about your colleagues who are dental nurses, yeah, and given you a great insight to their role.
Yeah.
And even if it wasn't the right thing for you, you can appreciate the skill set that's needed to be that sort of person. And the importance of that person within the care of the patient, as your role as the dental technician.
I'm really pleased. I was really pleased to be able to do it. It was great. I really enjoyed it. And it's really nice. Anything I do now, whenever we're talking about interprofessional stuff, to be able to say to people that I've been a dental nurse as well makes a big difference. It's really nice.
I'm sure it does.
Yeah. So it's really good.
And then, so from there, you went on to do your dental technology training, mm-hmm. and then I presume worked for some time in the army as a dental technician. Tell us a little bit about that part of your career. What was that like? What challenges did you have? What were your experiences in that area?
Yeah, it was really good. I was part of the group. We were the last cohort of people to train in the army. Part of it was spent going to Weybridge, Brooklands Technical College. Once a year, we would do a release where we would spend 6 weeks there doing some of the academic bits and pieces, science, etc. Some of the things there that we couldn't do at the dental course place. But it was 3 years of dental technician training. That was really good. Some funny stories about dental technician training. As you walk into the building, you would go downstairs to where the dental technician, I mean, every building you seem to go in, whether it's a dental lab, the lab is always downstairs. And the dental technicians would train downstairs, the dental nurses, dental hygienists, their training school would be upstairs. And the induction for the dental nurses and dental hygienists was often, you only ever need to walk in this building and go upstairs, don't go downstairs. That's where the dental technicians are. You don't need to know anything about them. You don't need to go anywhere near them. Just leave them be. And when you say that to a group of dental hygienists and dental nurses, all they want to do is come downstairs and discover what these people are. So that was quite nice. And as it happens, my now wife was a dental hygienist trainee at the Army's dentist. She was civilian rather than military. But the military hygiene course, you may well remember, Julia, was they trained civilians, a couple of civilians, a cohort of 10 people. They would be two or three civilians within that, and my wife was one of those, and that's where we met. So it was very fond memories for me going through my dental technician
training.
So we
were very delighted that she managed to find the downstairs basement.
She found the downstairs. That's where the, in fact, the coffee machine was at the bottom of the stairs there. So her and I met over the coffee machine when she came in one day and asked me if I had 10p for the coffee machine. and I remember having it. Yeah. So that's where we met. So that was good. So the dental technician training itself was good, and then finishing the training and being posted to Dusseldorf, which was the Army's second largest dental laboratory. The largest dental laboratory was in Aldershot, where we did our training. And then the second largest laboratory area was in Dusseldorf. And it was a really nice place to go as a newly qualified technician, because you had lots of good technicians around you. It was a nice posting being in Germany, living in Dusseldorf, living near Cologne, being close to the River Rhine, and having access to all those areas and those huge capital cities in Europe, and being able to access some of those was absolutely fantastic.
So are these, this time you've done your 16 years, and then what happens?
So it was, for me, it was, I had been really lucky in the army, and I'd had really good career progression, and I'd accelerated through the ranks, and I held a laboratory manager's position at just about 30 years old, I think. And so it was quite, and that was a fairly young age to hold that position. And I was really, really enjoying that. I'm really enjoying my career, and didn't have any intention. My plan was to sort of remain in the army until I was 40, from 18 to 40, and serve 22 years. And that's kind of what the expectation was. But I got to that age of around being 31, 32, and thinking, what am I going to do when I leave the army in 7-8 years' time? And whenever the Dental Technician magazine came around, most people would flick to the classified section, see what jobs available, see what their currency was, see what their value was. And then, and I would do the same, and I'd think, yeah, okay, that might be something to do in a few years' time. And I saw a job advertised at what was UMDS then, the United Medical and Dental School of Guy's and St. Thomas's Hospitals, to give it its full title. And it was Chief Dental Technical Instructor. I thought, oh, that might be a nice job to do in 7 or 8 years' time. That would be quite interesting. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, the army is very good at training people to do certain jobs. And I'd been taught to teach while I was in the army. I'd done some methods of instruction training, and then become a teacher assessor, where I'd learned to assess people. So I had some understanding of teaching, and thought I could be, and I'd been doing some teaching while I was in the army, and I thought I could be a dental technical instructor. That might be quite a nice thing to do. And I thought, well, you know, go and find out a little bit more about that job. So I put in an application form and was very honest. I was lucky enough to get called for interview, and the people that interviewed me, a guy, Bernard Smith, who was head of the Conservative Dentistry Department, he called me for interview, and I said, look, you know, I have to say to you, I still have 7 or 8 years left in the army, and this is something I'm looking to do, but there was no other way of coming to have a look around, and I wanted to kind of find out what was going on. And he said, well, we'll do the interview. And we did the interview, and he said, we would like to offer you the job. I said, I wasn't anticipating that, because I'd said, and I said, naturally, I'm committed to the army, and if I can't just leave the army. If I leave the army, there's a financial consequence to it, and I don't really have the resources to do that. And he said, well, we'd like to do the job, and we'll take care of that. So they paid the financial consequences and bought me out of the army, so I could do the job at UMDS at the time. And I wasn't necessarily going there to do it, but there was a time when I had to make a decision career-wise. I'd had good career progression, and I was at a certain stage where I could choose to go down a more administrative role in the army or stay doing something dental technical. And I just thought, actually, why not just do this? Why stay in the army, do 22 years and, for want of a better phrase, you know, fall off the conveyor belt at the end of the 22 years rather than make a decision? And I chatted to a few people about it, and I thought, well, yeah, why not just do this?
Yes. We hear that a lot in this podcast.
I know. Arguably, you can make a case for, we should say no more often perhaps, but I didn't. And I said yes, and that was it. And I'm really not one for looking through life through a rearview mirror. I just tend to look forward, and I don't spend too much time. I do reflect on things, of course, but I don't look at things and think that was a bad decision. Generally, I just tend to move forward. And it was good, and it was the right decision at the time. And I really enjoyed it. And yeah, again, I was really lucky to get a nice job at UMDS as the Chief Dental Technical Instructor in Conservative Dentistry, looking after a team of half a dozen people. It was really good. And contributing to undergrad, and postgrad education of dentists as well. It was really enjoyable. So it was nice.
Well, they obviously wanted you on board to go through all of that trouble.
Yeah, that was very kind of them.
And then, so at some point in your journey, you became a clinical dental technician. How did that fit into this kind of timeline?
At some point, we were looking at, this is about 2006, 2007, I'd finished my MBA. And one of the things we were looking at doing was as a department or as a school, whether we should train clinical dental technicians. And I created was asked to put a business case together. And there's a real tent. I think there's a real desire when you put a business case together to make sure it's seen to be successful. So there's a positive outcome that this business case is going to work. And actually, doing the business case for clinical dental technician training, I thought I really need to understand clinical dental technician training as well, what that is. And I applied to do the clinical dental technician course. And again, I was supported through that. So I did my clinical dental technician training for a number of reasons. I wanted to understand the process of going through clinical dental technology. I had, just before my firstborn came along, I'd completed the highest level of dental technician training that you could do at the time, which is a higher national diploma in dental technology. That gave me the criteria to apply for dentistry if I wanted to apply for dentistry. And at that time, I was thinking, whilst I'd said previously I didn't like the idea of wanting to do dentistry, I all of a sudden found, as a frustrated technician, actually, I probably would like to do dentistry. I would like to see both of these things going on.
Yeah.
And so I'd kind of looked at doing dentistry, and then Josh was born, and I'd sort of got the application ready to do dentistry. My HND was the currency I needed to do dentistry. I could do that at Bristol, and it was a 6-year program rather than a 5-year program. So that was, I sort of thought that might be the route I go down. And then life events happened. We became pregnant. Josh was born, and it then wasn't the right thing to do. Clinical dental technology gave me the opportunity to scratch that itch as well, if you like, that I could do both. I could do
That's
dental technology.
That's such a beautiful way of describing it, because I'm sure that there are many colleagues, technology colleagues, dental nurse colleagues, who feel as though they just want to take that next step and be the person who's providing the treatment rather than assisting the treatment.
Yeah.
So I love your description there of the scratching the itch.
So it was really nice being able to do that. Multiple reasons, really. Wanting to get a business case that looked at and see if we could train clinical dental technicians, and the desire to be the one that does the clinical work and does the technical work as well. And it's interesting, and I'm absolutely convinced patients benefit massively from that person seeing them clinically and doing it. So that was why I did the clinical dental technician training. And as it happened, it didn't make sense to run a clinical dental technology training program as a business case. It just didn't stack up. And I think that was, whilst all the time I was doing it, I wanted it to be a positive outcome, that there was a case to be made. There just wasn't. And I guess that is the result of a good business case. But it's an unusual outcome. But if the good business case was, if the outcome was, it just doesn't stack up. And to displace BDS students or hygiene students and compete for the same patients, where you've got, you know, a dental school with 750 undergrads all wanting to make complete dentures, and then you've got 20 clinical dental technicians wanting to take those complete denture patients away, trying to get the funding and all that kind of thing. And it just didn't work. There wasn't the chairs, there wasn't the space. So, but it was great. I really enjoyed doing that clinical dental technician training at the time. Yeah, it was really good.
And
that,
now you're doing that sort of academia and clinical dentistry at the same time. So that's quite an unusual step for dental technicians.
I don't know that it is that unusual, because working in the dental school, there are not plenty of, but there are many other dental technicians. So, you know, there's not many clinical dental technicians, that's for sure. There are other dental technicians.
And are they doing that, the academia, at the level that you're doing it, or are they?
No, they're probably not, no.
Yeah.
there aren't many that are
doing. I don't think there are very many Bill Sharplings out there.
There aren't many that hold similar roles. To my job, I guess, yeah, slightly different.
And what do you think about the importance of having people like yourself who are in the academic side of things, as well as the, if I can call it, wet-fingered element of dentistry? What's your view on that?
Yeah, I mean, it's from my point of view, it's absolutely critical and essential, I think. That I spent my teaching commitment is teaching on our MClindent, Master in Clinical Dentistry, Fixed and Removal Prosthodontic Program. So I teach on that program. And I think it's essential to be able to put myself in front of colleagues, dentists that are coming to learn their removable prosthodontic side of things from me. And if I'm not doing it, it just doesn't seem quite right. And being a, but doing it from a clinical point of view and from a technical point of view is adds a lot to the conversation when I'm in front of people talking to them about it, and it just makes teaching so much better. And yes, you could do it from the teaching side of it from an academic point of view, but having the same challenges of talking to patients that the postgraduate students who are coming to see us, who are studying generally on a blended learning route and are in general practice and are having to look patients in the eyes every day and say to them, you know, this is the level of investment you're going to have this done, without looking like you've swallowed something hard and jagged to say that. that's a real challenge for all of us. You know, so for me to be able to have to do that, look patients in the eyes and tell them this is what it's going to cost them to sort out them for their treatment, and to be able to explain to people on their master's degree programs, teach them as well, it makes a huge difference being in clinical practice. And yesterday I spent the day with 17 clinical dental technicians at Londex, so which is, I mean, just about 5% of the nation's CDTs all in one place in one time, which is unusual for any professional group.
That must have been a very energising group to be part of.
It was really good. It was really good. And to have those there for the day, and they were there to do some implant-assisted overdenture course. And that's an area I have some proficiency in. So I was talking to them about that. But if I didn't work in practice, it just wouldn't have been anywhere near as good a day. Yeah, because they're doing it all the time. They're at the coalface. And whilst I might see patients for X number of hours a week only, where they're doing it all the time, and a lot of them have said, have been kind enough to write on their feedback forms how much of a difference it made to them, me being able to talk to them about the issues we all have when we're treating patients as well.
Yeah, so and I think if you're able to say, academia, this is the same problem that I had last week with the patient, or, you know, I've had a lot of experience of these dilemmas.
Yeah.
I think, yes, like you say, you get a lot more respect from your...
And if one wasn't wet-fingered, you wouldn't be able to say that. So it makes it does make a real difference. And I really enjoy it as well. So it's really good.
That's good. The thing that strikes me is what you were talking about, being a dental nurse and that giving you this feeling of, I don't want to be anywhere near patients.
Yeah.
And you've just beautifully told us about the benefits of being with patients.
Yeah.
You know, so what's flipped?
I think maturity, probably. Okay. Yeah, being 19 years old and thinking when these patients that are coming in, primarily young soldiers who are coming in, who really don't want to be there. They'd rather be doing other things like shooting artillery weapons over the ranges and that kind of stuff. And with a field regiment, Royal Artillery, they'd all rather be out training, exercising, rather than sat in a dental chair suffering dentistry. So it was always people coming into to there having a bit of a whinge and having a moan. And I was thinking, yeah, I'm not sure I want to be part of that. And the dentist I was working with, when fitting the crowns and fitting the dentures, I was thinking, well, actually, that is the right thing for me. And then, but that was just, I think that's just immaturity, because as you grow up, and like I said, now doing that and then seeing actually making these prostheses and having the opportunity to fit those to patients as well, it just makes a massive difference to patients' quality of life. The same person doing the treatment, it really does work so well for them.
And I bet the patients are very happy and glad to be coming to see you now, whereas maybe that's a bit different to those initial patients.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you're definitely changing lives with these appliances you're making.
Yeah.
So fast forward now, here we are. You're an associate dean. You're the director of the London Dental Education Centre. So these management roles are perhaps, again, quite different from perhaps your teaching roles and those sorts of things. So were these something that you always wanted to do, or did they come by accident? Because this is a careers podcast and we're trying to inspire people and motivate people to think that actually there are lots of opportunities out there. I mean, you've already said you've got to say yes a bit.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Did you always think that you might end up doing these roles?
I guess once I'd had completed my MBA, then folk in the faculty did often turned to me when there was something that might be a little bit commercial to be done rather than true public sector. We would often have conversations around sort of commercial opportunities. And it must have been maybe 2007, 2008, something like that. I'd had a few jobs. I'd had my job as chief dental technical instructor. I was then took on a role as head of chief dental technical instructor for conservative dentistry, then chief dental technical instructor for conservative dentistry and removable pros. And then I took on a job, applied for and took, had a job as head of dental technology for Guy's Hospital, King's College Hospital and St Thomas's Hospital and the university. So I'd sort of moved up doing these slightly different management jobs and taking on fairly different roles. And we had a new dean appointed, Professor Nairn Wilson, now Sir Nairn Wilson. And Professor Wilson was had come from Manchester. And at Manchester, there was something there that he'd done previously called Mandic. And he spoke about starting something similar, Londec. And he spoke to me about it. And he said, you know, we tried to get this Londec initiative off the ground. It was an idea he'd had. And how would I feel about being involved in doing it? He'd always been hugely supportive and was absolutely, as far as being a boss, he's absolutely fantastic. Open door, always there to guide, steer, advise, always had perfect advice, had really good advice. And he was someone that I would go to for my development, my appraisals, that kind of thing. And when he had this conversation, he said, look, I really think this would work. And I think it probably needs you to, you know, have a think about doing it. Said yes, right. Well, let's do it. You know, and there you go. And there was a collaborative venture between the university and NHS, and there was £2.5 million to build the education centre, and we had £1.5 million of funding from the NHS to build it, which bought the NHS access to it over 80 days of access to it every year for 10 years. So they got excellent value for money for that sort of £1.5 million. But we needed another £1 million to make the education centre work. And one of my first jobs was sort of approaching industry, trying to get money out of industry. And we did that. We managed to have some really kind donations from industry to get the centre up and running. And then involved in it from the right from the outset, from the design and build. So I really do feel passionate about it. And like it's almost my baby.
Yeah.
You know, it sort of, it has been. And it's one of those things that, you know, you sort of sometimes you're defined by these sort of things, and I do feel that Londec is me and is mine.
And I think in that time that Londec has been around, I think it would be fair to say that CPD has also evolved.
Yeah,
you know, massively. I think that's quite a big seismic change. Yeah, I mean, historically we've had whatever we've had, but now, my goodness gracious me, people are being much more creative about their continuing professional development. So, yes, that must have been lovely to grow with that as well.
Yeah, really. And it was at a time when that was just changing and developing. And yeah, and having that responsibility for making sure we can put CPD on for all members of the dental team was really good. So yeah, so it was a really nice job. And I do remember Nairn saying to me, you know, we want Londec to be successful. And, you know, we sort of often would wonder, how do you define success? I mean, we're never sure really what would be successful. And we made a conscious decision to have Londec at arm's length from the Dental Institute, just in case it wasn't successful. And it was then easier to pull the plug on it, if you like. And it wouldn't be associated with, so at the time, for the first, when I was doing our business planning, our 2, 3, 5 year planning, it was just a case of being successful and making the place work. And we set ourselves targets of like an operating surplus of maybe like 25 grand a year, something like that, to try and give ourselves £250,000 at the 10-year point, so we'd have some money to invest. And it's been way more than that. It's been much greater than that. And we've been really lucky. We've really had lots of success. We've made at the sort of 5-year point, I started to see that whenever you would see the name King's College Londec, you would see the name King's College London next to it. And it was sort of welcomed into the faculty rather than being kept. And there was a slight branding change there doing that. So that was really nice. And it's Londec has grown from that. CPD, as you say, Julie, CPD has grown. We've delivering lots of CPD now. And we've been very lucky to have a really continued a fantastic relationship with what was Health Education England is now NHS England. And NHS England use the place for workforce development courses. We have lots of workforce development courses. We have a foundation training scheme in there. We have a therapist training foundation training scheme in there. So we have all members of the dental team coming through. So we had a day of clinical dental technicians there yesterday. And it's rare that the centre is empty. It's really quite good. We have to plan in empty days now so we can keep the place maintained and looking good. We're really, really lucky, yeah.
So there's lots of roles that we've talked about there within your kind of main career, shall we say. But you've also been involved in societies and the industry outside of that. And you've been awarded fellowships from a number of different organisations, all sorts of different involvement with societies. What is it that motivates you to get involved in that wider area? Why not just, because it sounds like you've got a lot going on just in your day job. Yeah. So what made you decide to get involved more widely?
I don't know. I really don't know. I sort of think I'm very lucky. I don't watch much television. Right? So I'm not a massive consumer of TV. And I can get by on a little less sleep than most, I guess. So I don't mind. I don't mind being busy. You know, I will be. You know, I'm up at 5:30 most days. I'm in the gym at 6 o'clock, and I'm in the gym till 7, and then I might spend an hour, if the day allows, sat behind a Bunsen doing something laboratory work wise, and then I'll be on a train into London, and I'll be doing similar. If I'm reading in the evening, I'll be reading. Books or reading something related to one of those roles that you're talking about. And I don't mind doing that at all. I do get the balance right. I mean, it's not all about dentistry, but I do manage to spend my time doing my training. I spend a bit of time at each weekend making sure I'm doing some cold water swimming or something, you know, those sort of things, or in a lake somewhere. And, you know, I try and fit in the odd triathlon and that sort of stuff. So I do try and have other interests, but I do like dentistry is just it's a real hobby, and luckily dental technology making things is a real hobby to me as well, you know. Mm. And I'm sure like lots of people might turn to their shed and go and do things in their shed. Well, I would just sit down and make things, make teeth, make dentures, and I like it. It's really good, you know. And you know, at the same time as being doing it and being okay at it and patients benefiting from it, it's a nice thing to be able to do. So I'm quite lucky like that. But the associations and those kind of things, I do like quite like dental politics. Sort of just generally having an interest in it. And I do think that I don't mind putting my head above the parapet too much, whereas lots of dental technicians don't like doing that. They would rather keep their head down, and that doesn't really trouble me too much. I don't mind putting my head above the parapet and having some what sometimes might be difficult or challenging conversations. I don't mind those. And I do feel that I want to see dental technology and clinical dental technology be the best it can be and be a little bit better than it was when I sort of started it. If I can, you know, that's what I sort of try and do. So that's why I try and get involved in some of these sort of things. And, you know, if people are kind enough to ask you to do some of these things, like everyone, it's always difficult to say no to some of these things. And I do have to get better at saying no. And I do say yes a little bit too often perhaps, but the upside of that is you get to do some of these nice things, and then people recognize that, and you know, some of the fellowships, that kind of stuff, they're not gifts. You have to
there's a lot of thought that goes into these sorts of things, obviously very well deserving of it.
Some of them people are kind enough to gift them to you. Otherwise, it's an application for them, and it's something you would work towards, that sort of thing. So yeah, it's good. Yeah, so it's not. I do quite enjoy dental politics and what comes with that. It's quite good.
I mean, clearly you are passionate about your career choice, but I think we can't not discuss the elephant in the room, and that's that actually numbers of dental technicians are low and getting lower just because of the situation. So why do you think that is? And what do you think we can all do as a profession or as an industry that we can try and do these things to improve?
Dental technology is, there's lots of dental technicians of my vintage, And they are tapering off, of course. You know, the people who are. So I'm 60 next birthday, and there'll be so the people that I was who taught me are now stopping dental technology, those kind of people, and a huge amount of expertise and wisdom, and huge numbers of people tapering off. So it is a challenge, certainly in the area of removable prosthetics. They're seeing lots and less people there. What do we need to do about it? I think we will see differences. We're having conversations yesterday around some of the new health apprenticeship schemes, and places like King's are at the point now where they're starting to make decisions on whether they're going to be apprenticeship training providers or apprenticeship endpoint assessors. There's those kind of conversations being had and need to be made. And I think whether there's a change in government or not, I think some of these things will still continue. We're talking about training doctors and dentists via apprenticeship schemes. So I think that will work for the rest of us, rest of the healthcare profession as well. So I think that might address some of it. And we need to make sure that it can be seen to be an attractive profession. Part of my time is spent, I have a role for the College of General Dentistry, which is a relatively newly formed college, which I can tell you a bit more about if you wish. But CG Dent, I chair the Faculty of Clinical Dental Technology and Dental Technology. And the college has a careers evening early December, I think 5th or 6th of December, where there's a member of each member of the profession putting themselves in a position where school leavers can log onto the webinar and ask questions about their profession. And we've got someone from my faculty board, a dental technician and clinical dental technician, a young woman who recently qualified, been a dental technician a while, but recently qualified as a clinical dental technician, Carmel. She's putting herself in a position there where she's going to be able to talk to school leavers about the benefits of wanting to train as a dental technician and clinical dental technician. So we'll try and do these sort of things. I think if we can, some of the things that we're trying to do aspirationally for all members of the dental team, not just dental technicians, for all dental team members, that the college and I'm part of the college council, we're trying to put a structure in place where we have a clearly defined career pathway. I think it's always been a challenge for, certainly for dental technicians, you qualify as a dental technician and then you spend your time working as a dental technician and you learn, get slightly better. But it's always been a challenge of how do you measure yourself and how do you say you've reached a certain standard? Same for dentists. Lots of dentists tell me the same.
I think it's the same for everybody, isn't it?
Yeah. So what the College of General Dentistry is putting in place a career pathway scheme, and I sort of know the clinical dental technician and dental technician one, but we hope we'll have a structure in place where people will, on qualification, be termed as a safe practitioner, which will be reasonable. And then after a year of being mentored through like the equivalent of a vocational training program, they could then consider themselves as a capable practitioner. Then they might be an enhanced practitioner, then a expert practitioner or an advanced practitioner. But there'll be a structure in place. And as long as someone goes through that in a certain way, can tick certain boxes on the way, and if it all goes well for the college, people can be mentored through that in a certified membership scheme. There'll be a nice structure for people. And I think in the fullness of time, you may be able to say, actually, for my practice, I want to recruit a dental hygienist. What I want is a dental hygienist who is at enhanced practitioner level. And you'll know what enhanced practitioner level is because it will be there. There'll be a structure there and it'll be the same for all professions. So I'm hoping the profession will become more attractive, dental technology to people and clinical dental technology.
Well, that sounds like an exciting future, doesn't it, really? It's certainly people thinking about the whole range of different members of the team and their capabilities and their skill sets and what...
And recognising them,
yes.
Yeah. So it is a challenge. The numbers, I think, we couldn't... it would be remiss not to mention that dental technicians weren't treated terribly well during COVID, I don't think, whereas lots of other members of the team were cared for perhaps a little bit better than dental technicians were and dental technicians were seen as being a little bit, as they often are, outside of the team, often the forgotten people within the team, unfortunately. And I think a lot of dental technicians during COVID, that probably cost us quite a few in numbers as well during COVID, right. You know, because it was a challenge keeping those who were trying to provide NHS provision from their dental laboratories just weren't supported, and lots of businesses folded. So that cost us a few dental technicians as well, unfortunately.
You know. Yeah, COVID has, you know, had some lovely things that came out of it, yeah. Perhaps some not so nice things, but yeah, that's an interesting element of dental technology and COVID.
Yeah.
And I think you've touched on it a bit there. But you're in this unique position where you've got kind of influence in different areas, your clinical, academia, these all organisations. So what do you think the future holds for dental technology? Or maybe what do you hope that the future holds for dental technology, if that's a different answer?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I think, as I was saying there, I think it's the future's bright, I think. But that's me. I'm always glass half full, you know. But I do hope the things that we're we are trying to do as a profession are positive things and will make dental technology and clinical dental technology better. And again, not just unique to those two professions, but I think the College of General Dentistry will be, if it can get it right, it's in its formative stage. It's only been about since 2021, really. So it's a fairly new initiative. But I think if that goes well, there will be a professional home for all of us. There is in the college, there are four faculties. There's a faculty of clinical dental technology and dental technology, a faculty of dental therapy and dental hygiene, a faculty of dental nursing and orthodontic therapists, and a faculty of dentists. So there are four faculties. Everyone would feel like they have a home and a professional home. It's not aspiring to be a trades union or anything like that. Aspiring to be a professional body for people, and it's where I think people will find their home. Hopefully that's a positive for people, and there's a bit of a positive there for dental technology and clinical dental technology. The other exciting things for both dental technology and clinical dental technology are the rapid move of digital dentistry, of course. You know, the fact that we might be able to provide restorations or prostheses for our patients quicker, smarter, in reduced number of visits, if we can get that right. Digital dentistry is really exciting. That would be really nice to be able to provide patient care quicker, smarter, cheaper, easier, those sort of things. That's quite exciting, I think, for dental technicians and clinical dental technicians. So I think there's lots to be positive about. It's just a case of trying to move these things forward.
Yeah. Being a patient.
Yes.
Patient.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, a patient, registrant.
Yeah. Yeah. And spent the day with 20 clinical dental technicians yesterday, and trying to say to them, there are lots of things that they wanted to talk about and things that needed resolving. I said, I think you have to put your head above the parapet sometimes. I don't really, that's not me. I think you might have to, those sort of things, because things ain't going to get better if you don't. And that's sort of the conversation with some of these people.
Well, let's hope they listen to your episode and get inspired to do those things.
Yeah, for sure.
Thank you so much, Bill, for coming on the podcast. It's been a really great time to have you on.
It's been really good. Thank you very much for asking me along.
Great to have your perspective.
Yeah.
If you've been inspired by that episode, did you know that the Eastman Dental Hospital Education Centre provide training for the whole dental team? Follow us on social media or search for the Eastman Dental Hospital Education Centre to find out more.
We hope you've enjoyed listening to this episode. We would love to hear your suggestions for future guests. Remember to follow us on social media using hashtag the Eastman Dental Podcast. And if you like what you hear, please like, share, subscribe, and listen out for future episodes.